She's going to be a very successful career on radio. She used to be on TV, which is, to me, a horrible medium. Why would you want anyone seeing you? I don't want it. She used to be on TV. She used to be in the movies.
I'm sure she would still do all that stuff if, I mean, she's
no.
acting.
She walked away.
She is definitely acting, Howard.
Yeah,
that's
she,
what I'm saying.
That she'll do. That she'll do. Rosie changed her hair.
Did she? She still had the same hair on.
No, different hair. Oh, no. Maybe your hair is the
it's
same.
It's the same.
It was curled by a professional this morning.
No, I think
Hi,
you.
Rose.
Hey, Rosie. You. Oh, you know what? Standing in the hall looked like you'd put blonde highlights in your hair.
No, I haven't gone that far over the edge. Hi, Robin.
You Artie, lost weight.
You know, honey, stress does that. Artie, do you know the amount of codependent aggravation I've had while you were absent all week?
Oh, come on.
I read your book.
Oh, thank you.
And then when you were not here, all I did was worry. And then when you came on and you did the whole living past the day of the death of the father,
right.
I have the same thing as you, Artie, and it scares me.
What do you mean the same thing? Explain.
I'm sorry about that.
My mother died at 39, and right. That was a big reason why I left my show. I left my show 3 weeks, TV show, 3 weeks after I turned 40, because I couldn't believe that, you know, I was living past my mother. It was a huge milestone for me. And every day since that, I'm 47, feels like extended play on a video game.
What do you think psychologically is going on when you think that, of course, I have that with Jesus, as you know.
Yeah, 33.
33 was my thing.
You blew past him.
I blew past him.
Everything has been an extended party.
I'm a huge narcissist and think I'm right up there with him.
Jesus and Belushi were both 33.
Yeah, but why do you think is going on psychologically that you don't deserve to live past your mother, or you don't deserve, in Artie's case, to live past his father? What do you think is going on there?
Well,
or why do you have to punish yourself? See, I think it's punishing yourself.
Yeah. But I read this book, Motherless Daughters, Legacy of Loss.
Yes.
This woman, Hope Edelman, wrote it. And when she was writing it, she wrote me an email or a letter and said, would you be interviewed for this? And it was during my TV show. And I thought, oh, this is going to be the sad, dead mother's book. I'm not doing it. I wish I had done it. Because what it said, basically, were all the things that Artie talked about as a motherless daughter. And, and that I talk about is that most people who lose a parent at a young age think that their life is going to end at that age too, that it's a common phenomenon for people who have survived this, and that once you do surpass it, it's a very traumatic event psychologically, because number one, you were never parented past that point,
right?
And number two, you can't believe that you are now getting something that your mother or father didn't.
Right.
I also noticed a lot of anger, that like people who've lost a parent early are really, really angry.
Well, I think it's probably one of the most devastating things mm-hmm. that can happen to a child's life. And then back when we were, I'm 47, I don't know how old Artie is.
42.
Okay, but when I was a kid in 1973, there was no Oprah Winfrey show with people, let's talk about our feelings, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We were given Valium.
And really? you were never sent to a therapist to deal
Nobody
with any of this.
About
no,
anything.
My father got everybody to come home. I was at my friend Jackie's across the street where I pretty much lived my whole life on Long Island. And her mother went into the other room so I couldn't see her face and told me I had to go home after the phone rang. And my mother got sick in Thanksgiving, November, and died on St. Patrick's Day. So 5 months later. So I went home and I saw it like 20 cars on our street that I was like, what is this? I went in, there were aunts and uncles and people I hadn't seen in years. My father sat five of us down at the table. My oldest brother was 12, then I was 10, and my baby brother was 6, and there were two others in between. It was 5, rather.
Can you imagine?
And he said, Mommy passed away. And all the adults started to scream and cry.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, what does that mean, passed away? Because when you're 10, everything's literal, you know?
Right.
And everyone started to cry and scream, and everybody, like, kind of, and all of a sudden, I was in my bedroom. From the story that they tell me, although I don't remember this, I locked myself in the bedroom for, like, a day. And finally, my Aunt Josie went out on the ledge and came through the window and said, if you come out, I'll take you to Corvettes and get you an AM radio, because that's what I wanted.
Right.
So I came out of the room, and my Aunt Josie took me to Corvettes. And a few days later was my birthday.
And that was the last it was spoken of, right? Like, in other words, they told you she passed away, you locked yourself in your room, your aunt takes you to Corvettes, but nobody really talks about this.
Well, then
and
it's
was
the
there
funeral.
No preparation? You
None.
Know, your mother was
Not.
Sick, nobody talked about
No.
possibilities.
What was wrong with your mother had cancer, right?
Well, I only found out in 97 that she died of breast cancer because they told us she had hepatitis.
Wow.
And I looked it up in the dictionary in school, and it said a disease gotten from dirty needles. And at 10, I thought it was from sewing. because she sewed a lot of things. She had a sewing machine and the, you know, McCall's patterns. Mm-hmm. And so I made up like a fantasy. And at that time also,
why did they tell you hepatitis?
I think they thought cancer would be a scary word for children.
Oh, okay. They were hiding it from you.
So the thing is, she died on the 17th, and the funeral was on my birthday, which is the 21st.
Oh, that's rough.
Right, which is rough. So yeah. All these people came to the funeral, but we weren't allowed to go to the funeral because my sister and I, who was 9 at the time, we went to the wake. Then we walked in on Long Island, one of these funeral parlors, and we, again, didn't know what to prepare, right? So we walk in. There's a whole crowd of people, adults, and I'm holding my sister's hand, and we walk up to the casket. And my sister says, "Why is mommy sleeping?" Mm-hmm. And then all the adults start to cry again. So then we're lifted up and we're put in the station wagon. We're taken home and we're told we're not going anywhere else. The next day, in my mind, is a party because it was the funeral.
Right.
But it was a party. And everyone who came brought me a gift because it was my birthday.
Wow.
So here's my mother's.
Confusing messages.
Yes. So my mother's dead. And I'm getting presents.
Right.
So, but that's why, you know.
Do you remember your mother at all? Really?
Yeah, pretty much.
Do you have films of her?
Yeah. No, we have no films. Because
pictures?
No, I have about 3 pictures of her. We didn't, you know, we didn't have a video camera.
Didn't have 8, well, they had 8mm.
But we didn't have that.
Your father didn't do any of that?
No, we didn't have the money for that kind of stuff.
So you have no real memories other than what you sort of, because to me, I don't remember much about my childhood, but my father took these Super 8 or 8mm films.
Yeah,
and to me, that's my whole childhood. You see what happened
exactly.
In chronological order. It's kind of sad in a way. I mean,
yeah, it's tragic. And it's why I take so many of those of my own kids. My kids call me a paparazzi because, like, every event, I'm there with the flip video.
I remember on your blog, you would have everything, the mundane.
Everything
was
documented.
On there. Right.
Everything.
But are you in the videos as well?
Well, you hear my voice, and you know, you hear me going, you know, "Hey, Blakey, that was a flip on the boogie board." And then I, you know, so you hear me. I'm present in it.
Do you think that's a reaction to not having anything of your mother?
Without a doubt.
Do you try to find people who knew your mother, who can sit there and talk to you about her? And that's probably even more painful. It probably makes you want her more.
I just started doing that about 2 years ago when I saw my father for the first time in 17 years. I saw my father. And
You haven't been in touch with your father. You think you're angry with him for letting your mother die in a rational way?
No, I think I was more angry at my mother for what I perceived to be, getting sick and sort of choosing not to live, which I realize is an irrational thought, but right. I was a child and I remember thinking like Jackie's mother who lived across the street got breast cancer and she was given 5 years, maybe 5% to live 5 years. And at Jackie's wedding, I said to her, "Why are you still alive?" And she said, "I wasn't going to die till I saw my grandkids."
Right. And you're angry with your mother for not hanging in there for you.
Yes. But there were other issues with my dad, needless to say. And
17 years you didn't see him?
No.
Was that hard for you? I mean, was that the hardest thing you ever did? I mean,
to not see him or to see him after that?
To see him after that.
Yes, it was probably one of the most difficult things of my adult life.
Were you afraid of him?
No. He's a very slight man. Can I get some water? I don't know.
Yeah, here.
He's very slight, and he looks a lot like, you know, the guy on Frasier who played Frasier's dad, John Mahoney.
Yeah.
What he looks like. Uh-huh. So when people have a visual of my father from, you know, any inferences I've made about my childhood, excuse me, I think they picture some big, burly Irish Robert De Niro, but he looks more like a combination of Father Mulcahy from MASH and John Mahoney from Frasier. You know, he looks like a priest almost, like a slight old Irish priest.
There's your water.
I got one. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks.
But so your father, 17 years.
Yeah.
You've alluded to molestation stuff. It wasn't between you and your dad, though, was it?
Well, you know, there were some serious issues that were going on in the house at that point, and you know, there were 5 children, and there were varying levels of abuse. And so after we discussed this, you know, my father moved away 17 years ago.
But you never accused your father of molesting you, did you?
You know, I think that we have had discussions, my father and I, about the things that went on in the house. And I think that we're coming to, you know.
You're talking to him now still?
Well, I saw him for the first time, you know, 2 years ago, and what happened was I was working on trying to do a show about my mother, to talk about my mother. And she was an only child.
Right.
And so she also didn't have very many friends. They were very isolated out on Long Island in the 60s when people moved out there from Queens trying to make the American dream. And, you know, she had five children right in a row, and then she died. So she was the president of the PTA. She was on the parish council at Christ the King. She was very funny in the school. And, you know, after, as adults, we talked to my father about some issues in our childhood. You know, my father moved to Florida. And
when you were how old?
17 years ago.
17 years ago.
So she was an adult.
Right.
Yes, I was 17.
So he
30.
Basically... Yeah. And that was it. And you stopped communicating.
Well, he occasionally will write me an email. He'll occasionally write me, like, I saw you on, you know, David Letterman or whatever. And, you know, good job or...
But, he wants to be in your life.
Well, he's never come to see me perform, ever. He's never seen me do stand-up. He's never seen me, you know, do a Broadway show.
Why do you think that is?
I think that he suffered horribly as a child. His parents came over from Ireland. His father was sort of asked to leave Ireland because of some of his nefarious activities with children, I think, in Ireland. And he had to come to Ireland and to America.
His father was was bad with kids?
Yes.
And sexually?
Yes.
Wow.
And
how do you know that?
My father told me this when he and I, before he moved 17 years ago, after we discussed some of the initial concerns that the five siblings had.
So you think your father was molested?
I know he was, yes.
Wow.
And my father's is one of like nine children, and all of them are severely, you know, in various stages of addiction and pain. Like, all of my father's siblings pretty much are alcoholics.
Wow.
You know, one of them had electroshock therapy and died as a result at Pilgrim State.
Mm.
My father comes from a very troubled...
Were you told all this when you were young?
No way.
How'd you find all this out?
Well, the aunt that died, she would come to our house and, you know, after my mother died, and she would be on lithium. And I don't know if Artie has ever seen the effects of lithium.
I've been on it before.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, then you definitely have seen it.
It's horrible.
Well, in the 70s, lithium would make people very robotic, very obese, and very absent. And so I watched it happen to her, and I knew that she had tried to take her own life more than once. And, you know, there are four cousins from that aunt. And so, you know, even though we were told it, it was never explained. It was like Aunt Mary's sick again, and, you know, and then she died. Having one of her fourth or fifth attempts at electroshock. So when I did go to therapy with my father 17 years ago for two times when he had a therapist and that he just went to as a result of us discussing some issues in our childhood, I went with him and his wife two of the sessions, and I asked him, what happened in your house and why are so many of your siblings in such pain? And he told me that when his father worked nights and when he came home from school, his mother would ask one of the nine children or eight children to take a nap.
Ay vey
is right.
Wow.
So, you know, my father's had tremendous amount of pain in his life and tremendous amount to overcome. And I think that he's a man who's doing the best that he can with very limited help and his age.
But you don't want to know him.
Well,
forgive him.
I think I have forgiven him, and that's really been a very healing part of my adult life. But I don't know that him being consistently in my life in any way now would add anything because of the, you know, fragility of his health and his...
But you wouldn't allow him with your kids?
No, sir.
No way?
No.
Wow, that sucks, man. That is just the worst.
Well, you know, it's a common thing, I think, more common than we'd like to hope. One in three kids is abused sexually, girls, one in five boys. And those are the statistics based on what people are saying.
Yeah, there's a lot of unreported.
The only thing you've ever said is that you've kind of been vague about it. You said when you were young, you were molested, but someone would come in through a window or something.
Well, that was my child's explanation. I told my mother, you know, someone comes into my room at night. And my mother would say, well, how does he get in the room? And I said, well, maybe through the window, because I lived on the second floor and the branches. So she had the tree cut down and told me, now, you know, nobody can get in. But then somebody got in again, and I told her, and she said, you lie like a rug. And being 8 years old, thinking rugs can't talk, you know, everything's literal when you're eight.
Mm. So you tried to tell your mom, but she didn't, she just didn't believe it. She was in her own denial.
I think.
Or maybe she thought it was child's sort of fantasy.
Well, although I had a tremendous amount of urinary tract infections, I constantly needed to be on sulfur medication as a child, which smelled like rotten eggs. I don't know if you, back when we were kids, what they gave you for that, you know. And I was like 6, 7, 8, kindergarten, first, second grade, and whenever I would go to the doctor would look, you know, and say to me, do you touch yourself? And I don't know if you... No, you know, you have children, but that doesn't start for a child at that age. You know,
no
that
way.
Something has been introduced in a child if that's happening at that age. And it was not me that was causing the infections, you know. So it's a very heavy thing. And it's something that for a long time, I don't really want to be any more, you know, descriptive than I have been, which is already too much for some of my family members.
Right.
Did
your father ask you not to talk about this? Did he ever say to you, stop talking about this?
No, my father doesn't really talk about emotions in any capacity. You know, he's limited, and he's older now, and the sad thing was when I was on my show, you know, there would occasionally be a paparazzi photo of him, like, you know, getting his paper out in where he lived in Florida, and you know that was so painful to see. Like, I don't want the man hunted or stalked.
Right.
He married my stepmother. She's been with him since I was 21 years old on a 24-hour basis. This was not something that continued. It was, you know, so I think that...
Do your siblings resent you talking about this, about him?
I think maybe one or two.
Are you in touch with them?
There are five children, and I'm the middle of five. I'm the oldest girl. And there sort of are two camps. There's three in one camp, which I'm in, and sort of two in another camp. And we all love each other, but without parents to help you try to get together with your siblings, it's a very difficult thing to do.
So some of your siblings you're not even friendly with.
Well, you know, we try to communicate with each other and to be in each other's lives. It's also hard when one person of five gets very famous, and when their truth becomes the truth, and the other siblings have, you know,
their own ideas of what was
correct.
True.
And
maybe they even had different experiences. You never know.
Right. Although, you know, we all pretty much have a united vision or version of our reality there. It's not as though there are some disputing any of the content. It's just how to disperse the content publicly.
I don't know how you deal with it. Like, what makes you think, I don't know, if I guess you're saying, well, you are saying that there's an issue between you and your father. That's the heaviest issue of all. And then what makes you think he stopped? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. And I do know, you know, I do know that it's a very difficult situation, and that I wish that it was very rare. And I could say to you that not a lot of people relate. But I know for a fact that that's not true. And I know from even the amount that I have, which I have to say this is the most I've spoken about it is to you right now.
Right.
But the amount that I have spoken of it before, you know, I would be walking in the streets and women would stop and cry. Just from the inference in the books. So, you know, it's a very...
Why is it on your mind so much today? Because you almost walked in like...
Well, no, it was Artie.
Was it Artie that's kind of...
Well,
that
I just
in?
Asked Gary. I said, Gary, was Artie really sick or did he go off? And he said, well, you know, he had this thing where his father died. Because I'm not up right at the beginning of your show, so...
Do you suffer from depression?
Oh, yes. I'm on Effexor. I started taking antidepressant medications in 1999, right after Columbine.
Right.
After Columbine, I couldn't sleep. And I kind of thought, well, look, I'm on TV. I have this sort of public, you know, place to speak and to change the world. And how is this happening? In public schools, children are being shot.
Right.
And I said, well, let's just, you know, take on the NRA. And let's say that we have to have sensible gun laws. And let's say... It was, you know, a catastrophe of epic proportion to realize how little the magic wand that I thought would accompany fame actually worked.
You started to think that maybe the TV show could change everything.
Totally. Well, you know, I thought that once you got to a certain level that, you know, me and the other women who were in positions of cultural power would get together and form some sort of union to help the children and women still suffering. So at the height of my Columbine insanity, I called Oprah Winfrey one night.
Right.
Which was an error in judgment, Howard.
Why?
Really?
Was she not receptive?
No, she was very kind, I'll give you that. And I don't know that I was even coherent.
Right.
And I was just saying, you know, we could do it together, we could do it.
We could change the world.
Right. And she's at home in Chicago going, who is this girl? And why the hell did she get...
How did she get my number?
Exactly.
But in a way, you weren't that crazy when you think about it. Your show was really popular, and women really did listen to you and follow a lot of what you said. You really did have a lot of influence. Your sphere of influence was huge, and so was Oprah's. Why not get together with Oprah and say, maybe we could affect some change here?
I think it's because I terrified her with that phone call. You know?
It sounded crazy.
Yeah, and you have to, I think, be a Jew from Long Island, which is what I am innately, right? To understand that if somebody else did that to me, I'd be like, hold on, where are you? I'm getting my cell phone. I'm driving over. Right. Like, Oprah ever called me, I would have been, I'm getting a private plane.
Somebody charge
the batteries for the cell. I'm on the turnpike, Opie. I'll be right there.
But, did she ever... say to you afterwards, I resent you for making this phone call?
No, in fact, she was very kind because Columbine was in April, and I called her sometime in April, and I believe in May were the Emmy Awards. The next day that I woke up, or I didn't sleep for a long time, which I don't know if Artie goes through that with his depression.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't sleep, and the next day I woke up, I deleted her phone number from everything I had. And I sent an email saying, you know, I'm sorry or whatever. And I saw her 4 or 5 weeks later at the Emmys. And I gave her a hug. And I don't know her, Howard.
Right,
I mean,
right. You know her from TV.
Yeah,
right.
I know you 1,000 times more than I know her, okay?
All right.
So, and I said to her, I'm really sorry about that phone call. It was a very, very sad and dark place I was at. And I don't know. I thought you had... And she's like, oh, it's okay, good to see you, you know.
Right.
And stay away from me. Yeah, exactly. Security.
She's a little nutty.
No, I think, listen, and it was justified. It was not like I called and said, hey, Robin, can I speak to you? It's Rosie O'Donnell. I'm having some weight loss issues. It was like I vomited on her, you know.
Right, you let it all out. But
yeah.
But do you think also Oprah might have resented your show? I mean, the amount of heat you were getting from your show, you were starting to rival Oprah in terms of overall popularity. I mean, that show was huge.
So do you think that Oprah would not have been an ally, she would have always had this competition.
Yeah, I think Oprah's more competitive than you think.
Well, I think she is competitive, and I think she is literally in a league of her own, no pun intended. This is a meteoric kind of talent that comes around once a generation. The worst thing that ever happened to me in my career was being compared or in competition with her. Because I in no way wanted to do that, and I don't think it's justified. And, you know, but when Newsweek had me as the queen of nice, you know, in the summer, she was on hiatus, and when she came back, the first thing she said on TV was, a lot of people have been calling themselves the queen of things lately, but, you know, here's the queen. And I was like, oh, no.
You don't even write that.
Oh, no. Here we go. Like,
yeah,
you know. But,
yeah.
But
you really weren't competing with her.
No. But. And I also think, you know, how could you put me in competition with a woman who I so identified with? Any woman... feminist. Here's a black woman who was raped as a child, who was overweight, who succeeded in spite of dire poverty to come on to be the most powerful woman in TV, you know?
Oprah is different than you. Oprah has a hunger that you don't have. Now, I'll give you an example, because Oprah can't say no to any deal. Oprah's got to deal with XM. Oprah's got the TV show. Oprah's got to have the magazine. Oprah's got to have. I still say to this day that you walked away from that show and you were able to say, look, I've made enough money.
Right.
I don't need all of this fame.
Right.
Is mind-blowing to me. That's the difference between you and Oprah.
Well,
she's
like
addicted
Artie,
to it.
Well, like Artie, because my mother died at 39, I knew I would retire at 40. That was my plan.
Right.
I was going to be done at 40. I was going to have as many kids as I could before that, as I could afford, as I could take care of. And then I was going to retire to be home with them.
What do you think it is having so many kids? Do you think that you're just trying to create the family you never could have and be the... I would think it would be hard for you to be a mother. I would think it would be so difficult. Yes, because you didn't have a mother to show you how to be a mother.
But I did have a teacher in a public school in Long Island when I was in eighth grade. When seventh grade, you switch schools.
Right.
In seventh grade, I was in my class, and this teacher said, where's your mother? I'm going to call her. You didn't do your homework. And I didn't answer. So I didn't know how to say it. I hadn't said she was dead. I didn't know how to. And he kept saying it. And some of the kids who went to my elementary school, started whispering. And I ran away from the school. And I hid and blah, blah, blah. And so when I finally went back to school 2 weeks later, there was one teacher who was a new teacher who was 27. And she made it a point to try to connect with me because she had heard the story. And she really did become my mother. She took me to get my first bra. She told me about everything that a girl needed to know about. She got me assigned to her eighth period study hall, just me and her. And for the first 6 months, I wouldn't talk to her. And she just sat there correcting papers, and she'd say, "Did you see Welcome Back, Kotter last night?" And I'd be like, "Yeah." And she, you know, and I wouldn't talk to her because I had, you know, guard up against her. And she became my mother. And,
do you speak to her still to this day?
Okay, here it comes. It's very sad. She died 5 years ago of breast cancer.
Wow.
Two mothers, same disease.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So she has two children, Jesse and Alex. Both of them have a child now.
Right.
And so it's like I have grandchildren in a way, or, you know.
But are you careful with your own kids to make sure that you don't let them in on all your sadness? In other words, do you sit and tell them the stories of what it was like for you without a mother? Do you tell them about
yes,
your depression?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Yes.
Well,
I tell them everything.
Don't you think that makes them afraid?
That Howard's mother
yes.
was a woman who lost her mother early.
Wow.
At nine.
And was basically her and her sister sort of raising themselves. And he heard the stories of the devastation of their lives because
and,
of that.
And it's made me very sad.
Yes. Well,
in fact,
you know,
I can barely listen to what you're saying because, you know, it's making me upset.
I understand.
But the thing is, when you take in a mother's sadness,
yes,
it's unbearable.
Right. Now, here's one thing I have to say. You know, they, since I left my show, I have an art studio. That's a whole house. It's not as, it's big as this room. And there, you can paint on the walls, on the floor, on the canvas. There's music blasting all the time. And the children spend the time with me in there happily.
Right.
Right? And my son, who's now 14, you know, when I'll say something to him like, you know, or Chelsea, my daughter, like, I'm funny. So that helps, right? So my daughter will say, you know, I can't believe, you know, you're not letting me go to the mall with so-and-so. And I'll say, well, you know what, Chelsea? When I was your age, my mother was dead. Do you hear me? Dead. You know? And she'll go, yeah, I know, Mom. It's a sob story. Like, so it's talked about.
So
because
it's humorous.
It's always humorous. And anything they say.
So it's like a fun house.
It is. Yeah, anything really. they're allowed to say. Any feeling they have. So my daughter.
But that's good.
My daughter, who's five, said to me, because sometimes when I am depressed in painting, I listen to Joni Mitchell, who, you know, if there was
a boy, oh, boy.
All right,
yeah.
If
that
there
makes
was,
me want to kill myself.
Well, that's what Kelly says. She
yes.
calls it suicide music.
It is.
Okay.
I used to listen to Joni Mitchell in college when I was feeling depressed.
Oh, once and I would, when and I was depressed, I decided to listen to Joni Mitchell. And, I almost drove off a bridge.
Yeah. Okay, now, unlike that, for me, it's like mother's milk. I listen to her. I can quote any lyric she's ever written. I think if there was a cult you could belong to, a Joni Mitchell cult, I would join it. I would drink the Joni Mitchell Kool-Aid. To me, the fact that this woman survives and is able to articulate the kind of pain that I live with constantly and is an artist in the world and sharing and living inspires me. But my baby daughter said to me, "Mommy, why do you only listen to sad songs?"
Yeah. Right.
And I said, "Do you think this is sad song?" She's five at the time. She goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Okay, what do you want to listen to?" And she said, "Black Eyed Peas," you know.
Right.
So then the Black Eyed Peas, because for 2 years, 3 years, all I listened to was Eminem and Joni Mitchell. I was furious and I was sad. Mm. Right when I left my show, it was 2 years of only Eminem and Joni.
But, you know, you've said something I think that's key. Even though you're a mother with a lot of sadness,
yeah,
you said you allow your kids to express their feelings. Now, I know growing up, I felt with a mother who was very, very, had a very sad life, that I wasn't worthy to express my own feelings because she had such a horrible life that I did everything in the service of
my
mother.
Well, you weren't in a playroom either.
Are you the oldest?
No, I'm the youngest.
Okay.
And I did.
Can I tell you something? Your mother didn't love you the most.
My mother did.
She loved your older brother the most?
No,
his sister.
Oh, but you're the firstborn son.
But I'm sure I'm sure my sister thought she was the most.
No, loved. No. Firstborn son, I think, between a mother and is a connection that's unlike any in the world.
Well, listen, my sister would probably have an argument with you on that. But the fact of the matter is that I feel that when you let your kids express how they feel about what's going on inside of them, that's good. I just never felt the room to be able to express myself.
I think you thought it was your job to try to make her feel better,
yes.
to sympathize with her, to try to understand.
But had she been to therapy, your mother?
No.
Right, because this is another generation. I'm like you. You go four times a week, I hear on the show, right? I've been in since I'm 16.
Right.
I've been going like constantly my whole life trying to dig and unearth all the crap that's inside and get it out, you know?
But do you ever think that you can get rid of all of this sadness and anger and...
I'm trying,
She's trying
honey.
To learn how to manage it.
Exactly.
But I'm saying, managing it is not any good. You've got to release it. You've got to get rid of it.
Well, I'm halfway through the Quivers book because I'm going through the whole, literally, Stern library.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's
God,
the one that'll put you
don't
under.
Quivers.
Well, that's my point is that I know you had weight issues. You're gorgeous, beautiful now. You're doing yoga. I listen to what you're... And I think to myself, okay, there's somebody who got through it and came out the other end, you know? I hope that I'm one of those people who can do it and go at the other end. But I think that, you know, the benefit of living with a mother who's depressed, who understands why, who's trying to manage it and verbalize it, is it allows the children to verbalize theirs.
Yeah, I think that's a different story.
Well, I think, and I've said that to Howard, too, that I think the greatest gift you can give your children is to let them see you working through something.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you've lost weight.
Yes.
What's going on here?
Well, here's another thing, is that I, like, and I think Robin can relate to it, I have no consciousness of what size I am. I don't think, like most people, I think, who are heavy, think about food a lot more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't eat really enough to be as fat as I am or was. It's about lethargy and sedentariness. I physically stop moving when I get sad or depressed. And when I'm doing something and when I'm, you know, so doing the Broadway show, I just had an 8-week run on an off-Broadway show. I had to 8 shows a week, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm moving and there's other people around and they're artists and they're inspiring me and I'm moving and then, you know, going through some things at home and I'm moving more because I'm with the kids and, you know, and I'm actively having to participate more and I'm starting this radio show, thanks to you. So I had to do that and I'm up and about and I've got, so then the weight comes off. Now, it doesn't come off to a degree that I'm, you know, a size 10. The thinnest I've been as an adult was probably a 14.
Right.
But, you know, it's not that I'm a 20 anymore, right? So I go between, you know, what I am now, I'm probably 212 right now, 210. And the thinnest I've been as an adult is probably 175. And that's perfectly, almost too thin for me.
Were you the thinnest when you did the movie where you had to be in the...
In the course,
the Gary Marshall movie?
Yeah.
That was your thinnest?
Well, yes, Exit to Eden. And that was probably when I was 170 maybe at that movie. And not on purpose, you know, I mean, it just happened that... I mean, I watched The Flintstones with my kids this weekend for the first time.
Right.
And my daughter, who's six, kept saying, "Which one is you?" And I kept saying, "The one in the blue dress." She's like, "That is not you, Mommy."
Right.
I'm like, "That is me." Well, she's never seen me like that. She's only seen me heavy. And so she couldn't even believe it was me, you know? So in that movie, Exit to Eden, I was about 170. And they had offered that role to Sharon Stone.
Right.
And she said no. And then they offered it to me. And I thought it was so funny, I had to take it just for that reason alone.
You know?
As someone asked me before the show, they said they once heard you, tell me if this was a joke or something. Okay. Someone said to me, they once heard that when you adopted your kids, you would rub them underneath your armpit in order to bond with them.
That.
Yeah, that's close. Yeah. Not my armpit, but a lot of books that I read before I adopted my first child, Parker. I was single and... It said that a baby inside the womb is used to the smell of the mother, and that when a child is adopted, there's the traumatic break for them, and that smell is no longer around. So what they recommend is that you let the child be on you as often as possible, and they can get used to your natural smell, and that becomes sort of resetting or rebooting the computer to help them not feel so abandoned.
Oh, okay.
So for
it.
Literally probably a week, I didn't take a shower. Now, I didn't smell horrible, but, you know, I mean, I used deodorant. It's not like I was a cave woman, you know, but I definitely tried to do everything that I read in the books that would help ease the initial wound of the separation from the birth mother, which I knew had a tremendous psychological effect at any age.
So anyway, you and I corresponded over the weekend because you're going through some tough stuff now with your marriage and all that. And you explained rather clearly to me, because I went through the same thing.
Yeah.
You've got kids, you've got some issues going on now, so you can't talk too much about that. So I don't want to, I don't want to screw you up.
But can I ask one question?
Sure, yeah.
Do you think marriage made a difference?
No.
Okay.
I don't.
In other words, did it make a relationship worse?
No. In fact, our marriage was annulled. You know, what happened is the war was on and George Bush came out and said, there's a press conference. I need everyone. Every channel covered it. And I'm thinking, my God, we're going to go into Iran, something big. I'm like, my heart's pounding. I'm having panic. Artie can relate. And what he says is, gays suck. Screw the gays in San Francisco. The gays are ruining America. And I was like, fuck you. Right. And I said, Kelly, let's get on a plane and go get married. Because there were thousands of people around San Francisco and no one famous had done it.
Right.
And so I called some of my friends who were famous and gay and said, you want to come with me? Let's go in mass and just stand there and go, you're going to round up the Jews for Auschwitz? Put me on the train. Give me the star because I'm one of the gays.
So that was the reaction from that. And then why did you have it annulled?
We didn't have it annulled. The state of California.
Right. I thought they grandfathered those in. Right?
No, they did not. They only grandfathered the second round.
Oh, right? That's what George was in.
That's right. George Takei, who says, Artie, you better not get sick anymore because that guy's fucking funny.
Yeah, he is good.
Who would have thought that George Takei?
Is he amazing?
He's amazing, and that voice is almost like out of
Thank you.
Yes. Hello.
Yeah, it's
well, you guys haven't figured out. I hate George.
Oh, that's what it is.
That's what he
wasn't your father.
That's not true.
Depressed about George
That's
being on
not
the show.
True at all. I love him.
Oh, so it was annulled, but so you weren't even really technically married.
No.
Although you always said I have a wife.
Of course we are. You know, we've been together for 12 years. We are a family, and a family is a family is a family. We will stay a family, you know. And Kelly and I are working through a lot of the stuff that we have, and the children are the priority.
Right.
We both continue to parent them, and we will continue to parent them. And, you know, you don't know what the future holds. I have to say, I never expected to be in this position. I don't think she did either.
Artie said a great line the other day.
I heard it. It was hysterical.
It was hysterical.
About the right wing?
He said the one thing about the right wing. Everyone's with Rosie now. They're all for gay divorce.
Exactly. I thought it was great.
Everybody loves it.
It was very funny, Artie.
But, you know, I'm imagining, because I went through a divorce.
Yes.
You as a single woman again.
Are you?
Well, they were just talking about taking you to Rick's.
We're thinking of bringing you over to Rick's Cabaret.
I don't know Rick's. Is this where the Symbian is?
No, that's here.
Right here.
Because I met a very handsome man out there who said, hello, I'm Michael Symbian. I'm like, are you the guy who made the sex toy? He's like, yes. Now you look at him. He looks like he runs a Fortune 500.
He's out there?
Really? He's out there?
That's what he said. Is he lying to me?
Tim Sabian.
Tim Sabian.
Oh, he was lying to me.
He'll be whatever you want him to be.
He did lie. I thought he was the inventor of the sex toy machine.
He's the inventor of the Sabian.
Tim will tell you he invented radio if you talk to him long enough.
No, I had him for 5 minutes and he was the Symbian inventor, whatever.
I can't even believe you called him very handsome.
He is handsome, I think.
Tim?
Don't you think?
Absolutely. I think he's one of the most handsome guys here. But that's just my opinion.
That's not saying a lot.
So I'm imagining you now.
Singles bar?
Not singles bar. I don't know what's going to be, but there is going to be a bunch of very hot women who are going to be looking for you.
Well, that's very complimentary, and I think it's mildly delusional. But remember, Howard, I'm not in the double digits yet in terms of partners, okay?
Even more attractive.
You think?
You know
absolutely.
What?
Nobody
Do
wants
you
a slut.
Think, now, Howard had
Nobody
his
wants
moment.
A slut?
No.
Did you just say that,
that's
Howard?
That's right.
Nobody wants a slut?
Believe me.
I thought that
no
was a tattoo you had on your arm.
No.
No, you don't want to.
Not about that.
No, okay.
You're not going to be a slut.
No,
Howard had his moment where, you know, he you know, got free.
I was
free,
a slut.
Yes.
And he thought he was going to cut a swath down the...
It lasted
the,
very short
the
time.
The country. Yeah, he was going to take it all.
Yes. And then Beth. So that's it.
Beth.
You got a home run there.
But I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah.
I did go a little wild.
Did you?
And I think...
Do you think you have to give yourself some time to...
I don't think I can even imagine.
Like,
what? Really?
No.
That's why you're depressed.
You think?
Laying at home by yourself.
No, I got 4 kids, honey, and I have to tell you that...
And how are you going to work that all out?
That's fantastic.
How are you going to go out and date?
Well, you know, I don't really even think of dating, to tell you the truth.
You have to be thinking... Listen, it has to have been a while for you in terms of sex.
No, actually, that's not true.
What do you mean?
You know, Kelly and I have a lot of issues, and sex wasn't one of them.
Oh, this sounds perfect to me.
Sounds like the greatest marriage ever.
You know, I have
but wait
to
a
say.
Second. If you are not married after a while.
Yes, a while, okay.
You know, let's say a while goes by.
Okay, let's say 6 months from now. It's
I
just
wonder,
me.
I see you in some sort of powerful relationship.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
You think, like, with some heavy hitter lesbo thing?
Yeah.
Like, give me an example, maybe.
Let me see who I could see you with.
Who do you think?
Well, Lindsay Lohan had her moment.
Too young, honey. Too young. Way too young.
Oh, yeah, but she's really sad.
And I have an anti-fame rule as far as dating.
Is that, right?
Is that true?
Yes, you're not allowed to be famous if I date you.
Too bad you and Oprah wouldn't hook up. And then you really change
well,
the world.
That would be a huge story, wouldn't it?
Wow.
What would happen with that? I can hardly imagine.
Yeah, the two of you couldn't go anywhere.
No, except for a buffet where we would both eat a lot.
Why are there always gay rumors about Oprah?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I think she's never been married.
Go ahead.
And she's exceptionally close to Gail. And I don't know that she and Gail are necessarily doing each other, but I think that they are emotionally the equivalent of...
A gay couple.
Pretty much, from what it appears to me. They wear rings. They go travel together. She does not have a husband.
They wear rings?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
I didn't know that.
So let me ask you something.
Yeah.
When you are together with your inner circle...
Yes.
Do you guys sit there with your gay friends and say, listen...
Yeah.
Oprah and Gail are gay.
Well, you know, here's a very strange fact. My closest friends are straight.
Right.
Okay, my best friends are Jeannie and Jackie. They've been my friends since elementary school. So I don't really have a gay gang that I hang with, right? But when I am with people who know Oprah or who I constantly ask, I'm like, what's the deal with Gail?
Right.
They, what's up with that? You know,
I want to know.
I think everyone does. And when they did that road trip... You know, I mean, what was better than that? It was as gay as it gets.
That's right.
Now, that doesn't, and I don't mean it as an insult either.
No,
I'm just saying, listen, if you ask me, that's the couple. I don't see she and Stedman hanging together in the car.
Don't you think if there was going to be a road trip, it would be her and Stedman?
Right, but I think that, you know, Oprah has a lot of stuff probably in her past and history, and who the hell knows what is going on in her inner world. And I also don't think she focuses so much time on that part of her life, because she's very busy, as you
said,
conquering the world and being the richest woman, which all the more power to her. You know, you live your life as you choose, and that's the choice she made.
I'm wondering who you're going to meet. I wonder how it's all going to go down.
I want you to get me. Think of somebody.
I don't know.
You had this fantasy of her life before.
Yeah, that's right.
I've heard a lot of cool things.
I know. I wish they were true.
But do you think she should now try to have that for a little while?
At the Four Seasons, remember?
Why not? Have a, yeah, I think you ought to date.
I don't know if I can, Howard. I've never even really dated.
No.
Lesbians don't date. They meet each other. They like each other. They move in. You've heard the joke, right? What does a lesbian bring to a second date? A U-Haul.
You know what I could see? And I would love if you did this.
Okay, let me hear it.
But you would never go for
it. You never know, Howard.
No, this is so wild. You would never go for
it. Does it involve the Symbian?
No.
All right, go.
And not even Tim Sabian.
All right.
That'd be great if you started dating Tim Sabian.
My God.
I got on the Symbian
Tim
Sabian.
I would love if you took Portia de Rossi from Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh, no.
Fantastic.
No, there's an I have an anti-fame rule.
Portia's hardly famous at this point.
Do you think?
That's
no, she was on Ally McBeal. She's
that's true.
Famous.
She's famous.
And I would also
you would
never
go out
do...
with someone famous.
No, I wouldn't.
Yes, you would. Why wouldn't you go out with someone famous?
Because I think it would be very disruptive to my children, family,
and
life.
What if your soulmate is famous?
I still wouldn't do it. I mean, if I met, like, you know who I met who I adore? I met Natasha Lyonne. Mm-hmm. On this play I just did on Nora Ephron's new play. And she's 30 years old.
She's into women?
I think she has a boyfriend now, but I think she's open to anything. Yes.
Okay,
she's a very cool, unbelievable. I think of anyone I've met in the last 10, 20 years in show business, I am the most enamored with this girl. She is fantastic in every capacity.
You have a crush?
No, it's beyond a crush.
You're in love.
I love her in every way, but it will never be sexual.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 17 years older than her.
Mm. Well, I don't see a problem. What is your age range then?
Yeah, I mean,
well,
what are you saying?
You can't have be in the 30s. I'm 47.
Oh,
whoa,
stop it.
Come
oh, honey.
What are you kidding?
With you?
Robin.
Come
you don't
on.
Want a hot young playful?
No, I do not.
She wants an unknown 50-year-old.
Yes, who enjoys children and wants to go on the boat.
What? Right.
Oh, no, Howard.
You're so goddamn mature.
Listen, I have... Listen. Kelly and I.
Robin's
I
boyfriend's 26.
Is that true?
Yes.
Not this week.
But look at her. Listen.
Yeah. All right, but go
no,
ahead.
No, but the thing is, Kelly and I have a very strong connection, and, you know, I am
so
not.
So stay with her then.
Well, we're trying to. We're
You've
working
work
things
it out.
Out. We're trying, Howard.
She's hot.
She's very beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
I've seen her.
And she definitely gets you.
Yes.
And, yeah.
She gets me. And, you know, sometimes she gets me too much. And she thinks, do I want to do this? And I go, listen, I understand. It's not a walk in the park.
Is your problem that your depression is hard to deal with?
I assume my depression is
hard to
deal
with.
In other
words, you're the problem in the relationship.
No.
It's not. It goes both ways.
No. We have both, you know, come to a point where... You know, we're seeing what will make everyone happiest is maybe to not live together, but continue to parent. We have different styles of living. I'm very messy.
So?
And I know. She's very not. you know.
That's going to end this beautiful thing?
No, no. I'm
Let
just,
her clean up.
No, but I'm just saying.
Wait a second. You got a lot of money.
Yeah.
Let's get somebody cleaning this house.
We have that. We have a staff.
Okay.
How could you be that big a mess?
You know, that's what I said. I feel like I'm Pigpen walking around, you know, putting the baby on my armpits, you know.
Why not divide up the... Sir, I'm not making a joke. Yeah. Divide the house in half.
No, no, no. We have a lot of houses, Howard. We live in a normal neighborhood.
Right.
So just like a Long Island neighborhood where the houses are close to each other.
Yeah.
So we're working it out. It's not like, you know, we're estranged and don't see or talk.
Yeah, she could have
I
her
love
own bedroom.
Her very much, you know.
And so you could be together but live separately. So
well, I don't know that she, you know, I don't know that we're going to be together. I think we're working through what's going to work best for all
have
of us.
Have either of you had sex with other people since the split?
No, but we have been, you know, it's been a long time we've been working this out. And
this is not good.
You know, we have I have an apartment in the city and she has an apartment in the city.
Right.
And we, you know, have the home and the children. Mm-hmm. So it's all okay.
You need something hot going on in your life.
See, she's pretty hot, honey. So
no, I think you need something.
We're gonna make it. You know,
I did too, honey.
Really
I did too.
You need romantic heat in your life is what I'm talking about.
Need a little wildness. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I got the perfect thing. My maid is an unfamous 48-year-old Mexican who I think
children.
Would swing.
No kidding.
Swing
you check that out for me. Or
yeah, I will. Yeah,
all right.
You know, can I say something? I understand the fame thing, Rosie, but
and
I think Howard goes through this. Robin would too. A lot of people do. There's one problem.
Yeah.
Whoever you marry or get involved with will become famous.
I know, and that's
you know what I mean.
Well,
and that's
Yeah,
an
but
issue.
Your wife, but your.